Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 96, Body Mind Healing Psychotherapy, June 15, 2007. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
So in Tai Chi, every Tai Chi movement is like a Rosetta Stone. It's a right brain alphabet that helps us enter into altered states of consciousness and essentially shape-shift into those, meaning to have boundaries, or every single movement is like that, or to be transcendent, like a white crane spreading its wings. And so at various different times, when we want to essentially alter our state of consciousness and shape-shift into another aspect of ourselves, Tai Chi and Qigong continues that alphabet. And just like music introduces us to an altered state and brings us to a different place, in the same way these movements in the body can do the same thing and are therefore very beneficial to mind-body healing.
That was the voice of my guest, Dr. Michael Mayer. Longtime listeners will recall that Dr. Mayer was my guest on show number 41. Speaking with us about body-mind healing with Qigong. Michael Mayer, Ph.D., is a licensed psychologist, hypnotherapist, and a Qigong Tai Chi teacher in the San Francisco Bay Area. Michael specializes in giving his patients self-healing methods for physical and mental health problems. He says he may have been the first person in the U.S. to train doctoral-level psychology students in the integration of Qigong and psychotherapy. He's authored 11 publications on body-mind healing, including books, audio tapes, and journal articles. He's also founded one of the first complementary medicine clinics in this country. I've known Michael since his student days, and not long ago I had a chance to attend an impressive day-long seminar that Michael taught on his integrative body-mind approach. I'm also in the process of reading his most recent book, which is both scholarly and extremely practical. The title is Body-Mind Healing Psychotherapy, Ancient Pathways to Modern Health. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Michael Mayer, welcome back to Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's so nice to be back.
Yes, well, you know, it is a return trip because way back in episode number 41, this one's going to be number 96. So, you know, further than halfway back, I interviewed you about your earlier book, and now you've got this new book, which is titled Body Mind Healing Psychotherapy. What's the difference between this new book and the earlier one that I interviewed you about back in episode number 41?
Well, these are two volumes of a set, called The Tao of Body-Mind Healing. And the first one was basically about Qigong and how psychotherapy could help out Qigong practitioners and that whole tradition. And this second volume is mostly about psychotherapy with essentially how Qigong and ancient sacred wisdom traditions in general can help to deepen and broaden the foundation of psychotherapy.
Okay, did you know that it was going to be a two-volume set when you wrote the first book?
Actually, it was a one giant piece of work, and I was advised that it was too much, and so I decided to divide it up that way, kind of like a yin-yang symbol. One is the black dot, the black circle with the white dot, and the other one's the white circle with the black dot. So it's the perfect yin-yang symbol in terms of my life work.
Well, that was good advice because both works are fairly encyclopedic, especially the second one, I think, will be just an invaluable reference work for anybody who's doing psychotherapy and also interested in Qigong or martial arts or energy psychology, trying to integrate those, I think this will be a seminal reference work for people.
Thank you. You're very kind.
Now, I know from some emails that you and I exchanged that you're excited about the cover of the new book. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to see it because what you sent me was a pre-publication copy that doesn't have that cover, and I went on Amazon, and although the book's listed there, there's no photo of the cover. So perhaps you can describe it for us and tell us how it got created.
Well, the cover is a cover of two streams becoming one, and it has somebody sitting at that stream, and that's how my whole journey began. When I was in my early teens, I used to sit by a river where two rivers became one, and this was long before meditation was known to me, or maybe to most people in New Jersey. I don't even think they had allowed the word meditation to come into New Jersey.
Yeah, right.
And I would just listen to those streams coming together, and I was meditating but didn't know it. Native Americans say that the places that call us in our childhood hold keys to our destiny, places in nature. And that proved true to me because East and West, mind and body, ancient and modern, became what my life path was about. And when I do workshops, I invite people to focus in on what it is that called them in nature and what that has to do with their destiny.
Yes, that sounds wonderful. You know, I'm hoping you can get a picture of that cover up on Amazon. Maybe by the time my listeners hear this, you'll figure out how to get Amazon a photo of the cover of the book.
It's on my website, bodymindhealing.com, and I sent one to Amazon. I don't know whether they put it up yet, but they can see it on my website.
Oh, okay. I went to your website, but I didn't see it there. I'll have to take a closer look.
BodyMindHealing, www.bodymindhealing.com/store.
Okay, store. Maybe that's the key. I might not have gotten to the store. Let's see here. Well, you know, I was talking about how I think this will be a seminal work. And in fact, is it true that these two books that you've written on the Tao of Body-Mind Healing, the series, that they are the first to integrate Qigong and psychotherapy?
Yes, this is the first book that's integrated Qigong and depth psychotherapy.
Well, that's really amazing, and that pretty much guarantees, I think, that they will be seminal books that people will want to refer to.
Well, I hope so, because it's not just these books now, but I've been really doing this for about the last 20 years. I was the first person to train doctoral-level psychologists in these methods at the California Institute of Integral Studies and courses there for 2 years. And back in the 1980s, I did a 3-semester course at John F. Kennedy University teaching people how to do this. And now there are other people that are beginning to start to do this, but it's still in its seminal phases.
Yes, yes. Now, I don't know if you remember, but I studied the long form of Yang-style Tai Chi for several years. Remind us of the difference between Tai Chi and Qigong.
Well, Qigong is the overarching system of which Tai Chi is the best known system. So Tai Chi is a system of Qigong, but there are many different systems of Qigong for many different purposes. In other words, there's medical Qigong. There is internal alchemy Qigong, there's Qigong for longevity, there are animal forms of Qigong. And so when I'm teaching Tai Chi, I show how Tai Chi has four levels of healing purpose in it that have very often been forgotten. And in that is self-healing, self-defense, many other things. And I outline that in my first book. But Qigong is the overarching system of mind-body healing, of which Tai Chi is one.
Yes, I see. And I remember from our previous discussion that you did a very good job of documenting even how Qigong probably goes, has its roots way back in time in shamanic practices.
That's right.
Now, the title of this book is Body-Mind Healing Psychotherapy. That's the main title. And so tell us, what is body-mind healing psychotherapy? That's quite a mouthful. What is it?
Well, body-mind, many people talk about mind-body healing, and since we're such a mental culture, I like to put the word body first, and to make them one word rather than putting a dash in between, in order to emphasize the unity of mind and body. Particularly in terms of being a psychotherapist, those can't really be separated because things are happening in your body every time you're talking about your anxiety or whatever. And there's been a mistake in the training of therapists, which is saying that psyche means the mind. It actually meant the soul in its original Greek usage. And so the idea of the soul, which has to do in ancient times with fire, earth, air, and water, it has to do with combining all of those elements. So in the training of therapists and in psychotherapy practice, research is now starting to show that the body is very important, and brain scan studies are showing that therapies that use the body, the somatic dimensions of psychotherapy, are more successful than ones that are just mentally oriented. And so body-mind healing psychotherapy not only combines mind and body, but goes back to ancient sacred wooden traditions in Qigong, and it combines psychomythology, Qigong, and other energetic approaches to healing, as well as traditional forms. So there's 10 levels to it. I won't go through all that, but cognitive therapy and psychodynamics, using self-soothing by touching acupressure points, and doing various aspects, clinical hypnosis, where you are activating what's called a microcosmic orbit rep to help to increase both the relaxation and the energy of the person.
Okay, you've touched on about three things there that I really wanted to hear more about, to go into depth, and hopefully I'll remember all three. Let me back up to, you mentioned the Greek idea of the elements, and I know that in Chinese medicine, they talk about the elements. They're a little bit different than the Greek elements, right?
That's right. There are four elements in fire, earth, air, and water in the Greek system, five elements in the Chinese system, fire, earth, metal, water, and wood.
And, you know, to the Western ear, things like fire, earth, water, wood, you know, they don't seem to have much relationship to either psychology or what we understand as medicine. So how do you make sense of that and bring that into your work? Because I know that you do bring it into your work, at least at a metaphorical level.
Well, the idea of the elements in healing is very important. The idea of activating the fire in the person when somebody is depressed. What I do is have the elements naturally arise in person and watch when they're expressed in various ways in the body. So at moments that somebody is going through a self-shift, which is a term that comes from Eugene Genlin's focusing, and I was his training coordinator for 10 years, at those moments of self-shift, somebody is doing something with their body that expresses some aspect of those elements that they need for healing. And what I've discovered is that very often those are the same postures that would be used in internal martial arts to help to defend yourself. And so somebody might, one patient who is dealing with going back to see her father, who she hasn't seen for many years, put one hand straight forward as if to form a boundary like earth, and the other hand welcoming underneath that. And so that is a Tai Chi movement, and she was naturally doing that to activate those elements. Because human beings, when they're out of touch with their own elements, they're not grounded, for example, then I would teach them microcosmic orbit breath in order to help you sink their chi to the ground, following their out-breath down. So she was able to do that and to really get her ground and form boundaries with her father, who in the past had been very abusive. So each of those elements is really who we are as human beings, and we're out of touch with those, then that's when psychological dysfunction happens. And there was actually a word for that in the ancient times called the elementals. They were called devas, like of the earth. So there would be the dryads and You know, in Jungian psychology, there are all of those names were actually the Greek honored how the elements were important in terms of creating balance in the psyche. They were all out of balance in one way or another, and psychotherapists are doing that all the time with their patients. And so this is an entryway into ancient ways of rebalancing the psyche, not just with new beliefs, which is very important in terms of cognitive therapy, and that would be the air element, but also in terms of grounding that in the body, which is used with thinking breath, and to activate the energy in the body, for example, when you are depressed, how to do that naturally rather than just force something through exercise, or in terms of people that are suffering from trauma. The idea of using, beating pillows or model mugging or things like that are very yang methods of reactivating power. But one of the important elements in Tai Chi and Qigong is learning how to activate the yin elements of yourself and showing that there's just as much power in holding your stance that way. So I teach people how to do that both verbally as well as energetically.
So yang would be the more forceful, outgoing energy, and yin would be the more relaxed, receptive energy. Is that right?
Yeah, and that has very important implications, not just theoretically, for the kinds of methods that are getting very well known now. For example, one of the growing edges in psychology is energy psychology, where tapping points on the body is very done with Gary Craig's EFT method and various of the other energy psychology methods. Qigong, part of my work in presenting at the energy psychology conferences is to try to broaden and deepen the foundation of energy psychology. And so tapping is just one of the dimensions that's used in Qigong, but there's also slower methods of holding, where you're basically putting your hand and soothing, like, for example, the heart. I use that a lot. I'm putting having my patient put their hand on CV-17, congestion vessel 17, that's in the center of the heart. Or the circle stop and feel method, which is a way to both activate energy as well as to have relaxation at the same time, balancing the yin and yang. So when in our training we seek out these ancient methods and look at them as being too oriental or too primitive or whatever, way back from the past, we as psychotherapists are missing a major element that can help the relaxation. And even by taking little bits of these traditions and then bringing them forth rather than really understanding the depth of what's behind them, you're getting little gems of wisdom, but not the whole treasure house.
You know, speaking of energy psychology, I heard from someone, I don't know if it was you or I think it was somewhere else, that the American Psychological Association is fairly hostile to the idea of energy psychology and doesn't recognize it. What can you tell us about that? Why do you think that is, and what are the chances of that changing, do you think?
Well, it's actually very strange, and I go into the politics of it in my book, where there was a person that said that he founded energy psychology, Roger Callahan, was making the claim saying that it was 100% effective, and he was charging $100,000 for his training, and he basically set a bad note with the APA. But I try to bring out in my book that many people that say that they're founding something, like even psychology was said to be founded by Wilhelm Wundt in his laboratory in Leipzig, Germany in 1879. And psychology had roots way, way, way back before that, and that's
sure.
What I go into in my book. In the same way, Roger Callahan isn't the founder of energy psychology. Energy psychology is part of the history of indigenous cultures throughout the world, and I go into that in my book. But, energy psychology was there in Freud, and he talked about energy effectors, and we had Wilhelm Reich. And what I pointed out in my book is that the body and the energetic dimension is really part of cognitive therapy and all traditional forms of therapy. And I think that it'll just be a matter of time until Western psychology takes that in and sees its value. In the past, they have given some continuing education credit for energy psychology workshops to myself and other people, but it's right in flux right now, and I do go into that to some degree in my book.
Okay, good, good. One of the things that I really like about your book is that it integrates so many different perspectives. It, you know, touches on, as you mentioned, it touches on mythology, on psychosynthesis, on psychoanalysis, on hypnosis, and on cognitive behavioral. And so it's really not just about Eastern thought and Chinese medicine and so on, but it's really an integration that really pulls it all together, I think, in a very beautiful way. Now, I was particularly interested in your discussion of hypnosis and integrating hypnosis because much of my own work in the past involved hypnosis. And so maybe you could comment a little bit about Qigong and hypnosis and what the similarities are and so on.
Well, let's see. First, you said something a moment ago that I just wanted to go back to, which is really that in terms of working with myths and symbols, Carl Jung said that archetypal symbols were energy potentials. So really when you're working, like let's say in a Jungian-oriented way with symbolic process, there is energy in those symbols. So I think that's another artificial split that's been created, and by symbolic process therapists not being aware of the energetic dimensions of that, they are somewhat limited. And in my workshops, after I do a mythic journey process with people and they find a self shift and a new life stance, I have them, if they want to embody that with one of the animal movements of Qigong or other Tai Chi movements to help to bring in and essentially create a new life stance.
Okay, well, go ahead. I'll let you finish.
I was going to lead that right into your question in hypnosis.
I'm going to stop you, though, because I'll remember the hypnosis. We'll tag it, but I'm intrigued by the animal postures. And so I'm wondering if you could give us a case example of a situation where you worked with somebody and at some point you used the idea of the animal posture as a way to consolidate the work energetically.
Okay, well, let's see. One of my students had issues about withdrawing a lot. She had had rape happen in her adolescence, actually, and had a lot of fear, and in relationship she had a victim stance. And in her mythic journey process, she became an ostrich, meaning that the way that she was going to protect herself in the world was to put her head in the sand. And that was creating a lot of problems in her relationship, because when her husband was doing something that was inappropriate, she had this passive-aggressive withdrawal stance. So in the mythic journey process that she did, out of that came understanding that, and then seeing that she needed to embody more of a tiger energy to feel her power. And so normally, when you're doing mythic journey process or psychomythological work, that would be enough. You'd feel the energy of that symbol. But it was very helpful for her to actually do the tiger form of Qigong, which I taught her, and that, she said, helped her to really embody much more that new stance of the tiger rather than the ostrich. Now, in my book, I talk about how the earliest form of healing in the Western world at the Temple of Asclepius was, and this is the origin of psychodrama, was to go into the Dionysian temple and to enact something that would be helpful to you. The Asclepian priest would send you to the theater to enact an animal form or put on a mask or something different than what you normally were. And that is the very root of our word person or persona, and which is the very root of healing in the Asclepian temple, the first holistic healing temple of the Western world.
Okay, so now we'll, thanks for giving me that example. It does, I think, help to ground that. So now let's go on to the Qigong and hypnosis question. How do you see those two either being similar or different?
Well, they are overlapping circles, and there's something in clinical hypnosis that's called the activity-passivity paradox. And what's being discovered now with the growing edges of hypnosis research in Rossi's new book is the idea that intention changes whether hypnosis relaxes you or energizes you. And that has been known in Qigong for thousands of years. There's a word for it called sung, which means relaxed awakeness. And when you're in a posture in Qigong, depending upon your intention, you can either relax or energize yourself and really feel that in your body. So that's one element of the answer to the question. But another one is that in hypnosis, a lot of the actual techniques of hypnosis, like the arm levitation method, is really there in Tai Chi. It's the very first movement of Tai Chi where you learn not only to have your arm raised, but exactly how to raise it so that your elbow is very relaxed in order to create a trance. But the deeper answer to the question is that in hypnosis, the part of hypnosis that I focus on is the idea of altered states of consciousness and shape-shifting. So in Tai Chi, every Tai Chi movement is like a Rosetta Stone. It's a right brain alphabet that helps us enter into altered states of consciousness and essentially shape-shift into those, meaning to be, to have boundaries, or every single movement is like that, or to be transcendent, like a white crane spreading its wings. And so at various different times, when we want to essentially alter our state of consciousness and shape-shift into another aspect of ourselves, Tai Chi and Qigong contains that alphabet. And just like music introduces us to an altered state and brings us to a different place, in the same way these movements in the body can do the same thing and are therefore very beneficial to mind-body healing.
I love that expression that you use, that you said the Tai Chi postures are like the Rosetta Stone, giving you an alphabet for, what did you say, different states of consciousness?
For accessing those different altered states. It's like if you only knew a couple letters of the alphabet, you'd be very limited. You know A, B, and C, and you can't really speak all of English. In the same way, we have those. All of the letters of the alphabet, or many of the letters of the alphabet, are expanded when we do these Tai Chi movements to activate aspects of the human potential. Like, we are monkeys, and there are, in Qigong, monkey forms. There are tiger forms. There are crane forms. Each of those, and each of those can be found in Qigong and in Tai Chi movements. And by accessing those, you give yourself, you give your patients ways to expand their healing repertoire.
That's really fascinating. Just thinking about that really kind of expands my sense of Tai Chi as I experienced it. There are so many different levels to all of this that are possible, aren't there?
Yeah, and what I'm trying to do in the book is to not make people learn Tai Chi and Qigong. Basically, the book is about how to introduce Tai Chi and Qigong into your sessions as a psychotherapist without ever doing a Tai Chi movement with your patient and without ever mentioning a word about Tai Chi and Qigong. So what that does is, for example, you teach somebody how to breathe in ways that sink their chi, but you don't need to mention chi. You can just help say, use a word like help to ground yourself. And when you do the sinking breath of the microcosmic orbit, you're doing that. Or when somebody is making movements in their body in a moment of self-shift, and you see those, and you help to freeze the camera there, so to speak, and help the person to be aware that their own primordial self at the moment of self-shift is actually doing these movements.
I think that's really great, the way that you're bringing it down to sort of an everyday level without the without all the terminology and perhaps mystification that for at least some clients would be very off-putting. You know, we're both here in California, Northern California, San Francisco Bay Area at that. So a lot of people in this region might really be turned on to these ideas, but I gather you have people who come into your clinic that, you know, the ordinary working class people who, you know, might really be adverse to some of these Eastern ideas, if they
exactly,
yeah,
and that's exactly why I developed it this way and used it in just very simple ways. Out of it, I extracted the most important method of my process. It's called the River of Life exercise, and what that does is you follow your out-breath down your body, and while you're doing that, you'll hit into things in your body. So this is a combination of genuine focusing and imagery work and qigong. And so as you're traveling down the river of life, you'll hit into your own issues with your body and your heart and your belly or whatever, and they'll arise. And so this combines both transcending and transmuting dimensions of feeling. Transcending means that you go into an altered state, and transmuting means that when you go down into those places in your body that's stuck, then either your psychomythological or other aspects of what's just in there, your fear, your anxiety, or whatever, will come up. One patient, for example, that I was dealing with was a man whose back went out and he was scheduled for surgery. And our orthopedic surgeon wanted to send him over to people in our clinic first. And when I had this person breathe down into his lower back, issues came up from a way that he was sexually abused in his childhood. Actually, he was taken by two men, and in his adolescence it was, he was hitchhiking, and two men picked him up and stabbed him in the back after doing sexual things with him that they didn't want to do, that he didn't want to do. And it was the first time he really remembered this, how he was stabbed in the back, and he crawled in through his bedroom window. And when he crawled in there, he didn't let his parents know that this had happened, and he never let anybody know that this had happened for many years. And while he was breathing in this way in my office, it came up for him right at the place where his back was at. And after that, he had a healing. Whenever I tell this story, though, I'm very careful to point out that he was working with other people in our clinic. He was working with a chiropractor and an acupuncturist. So really what I say is the crux of my work is not so much me alone doing this, but it's really being an advocate for integrative medicine, for being in clinics and having professionals come together and working on all these different levels for people's healing. And so I was with that clinic for 3 years and then moved off on my own. But that was a very important part of the foundation of the book is about, which is really that integrative medicine and how do you fit into the wider picture of behavioral health care.
Yeah, yeah. You know, an idea that got triggered for me when you were talking about hypnosis and qigong and the idea of relaxation and alertness coexisting, I've just been doing a series of interviews on dreams, and one of the paradoxical things there is that the body appears to be relaxed. We always thought that during sleep that the brain was very quiescent. But of course, what they've discovered in recent years is just the reverse, that although the body is for the most part immobile, the brain is very activated. And somehow that idea seemed to have some resonance with what you were talking about in terms of hypnosis and qigong.
Well, actually, you're alluding to one of the deepest aspects of healing in qigong. Like when you do qigong movements, the difference between qigong and exercise is you combine stillness and movement. So first you do big movements. They say that big circles are great and small circles are even better and no circles are best. That's what the grandmaster of my Yichuan tradition said at the end of Wang Hanshan. What that means is that first you start off doing a movement, like I have a spiral making a movement that I use for people for a joint problem. So first they do a very big movement, and then they do the snake a little smaller, and they imagine they're going up through the spirals of the galaxy, or the spirals that are down in the molten core of the Earth. And their injury in their body is just a little small speck on that giant spiral. As the spiral is made smaller and smaller, pretty soon there's no spiral at all, and you're just in stillness. But you still feel the energy and the movement of that spiral right on the level of your cells, which, interestingly enough, are double snakes, the double helix. Mm. And at that level, where in our cells, where it's total stillness, the double helix is vibrating at incredibly fast speed. So just like you said, in that stillness, there is incredible energy just by what we focus on inside of our body. And that's used for healing. And the Tao Te Ching says finding the stillness in movement, and the movement in stillness.
And it's interesting how even in this ancient Chinese approach, focusing imagination seems to be very important.
What I say in my book is symbols are multifaceted, and we can say many things about them and many meanings. I like to think about the double snake of the caduceus, the oldest symbol of healing, is the imaginal on one snake and the somatic on the other. And those are the two snakes that wind up the central staff of our spine in healing.
It's interesting. And of course, only in recent years has Western medicine begun. You know, the door is opening slowly, slightly, a little light is coming in to begin to recognize the importance of imagination, that is kind of this linkage between the inner world and the outer world. And we've been so focused on the outer world, and we're just, you know, the outer aspects, the things that we can really observe and see in a person's body and measure objectively. But the work that the person's able to do from inside that we can't directly observe, that's also extremely important and seems to be acknowledged in these ancient traditions.
Exactly, and that's why the behavioral traditions that's so taken over by our culture is we are an outer-oriented culture. And the cultures that our Western civilization destroyed were very inwardly oriented. And the whole pagans in Europe and all those that were doing inward processes were not that respected in the West. And one of the places in the Western world where you can get that is in psychotherapy. And so these particular methods of inward accessing are a very important part of psychotherapy and going on an inward journey. And that's why for 10 years I was really taken by Eugene Gemelin's focusing process, which is a dimension of inward accessing. And that inward accessing leads to a felt shift, he found, and measured that in actual brainwave studies, that when you look within, something shifts and an energy changes. And there's a researcher named Norman Don that really showed that those energetic shifts happened at a moment when somebody got an aha experience. And then the idea is, how do you ground those ahas and help them to be there in your life and to anchor those? And so the anchoring methods of clinical hypnosis, the anchoring methods of Qigong, are ways to really bring in those new life stances in your body, new symbols, but also through new ways of standing. Like, if you're just, to just bring that down to earth, our posture really shows those new life stances. So if you're arrogant, your chest is going to be really out. And if you're self-assured, you're going to be out a little bit less. If you're totally centered in terms of recognizing that you are the center of the universe and also a piece of dust, then your chest is right in the middle. If you're kind of dejected, then your chest is collapsed a little bit. And if you're worthless, it's all the way collapsed. So the psychotherapist or the person that's aware of those bodily changes as they embody new symbols and new ways of being will begin to feel the body change. You can't separate. That's why I call it body-mind healing psychotherapy.
Yes, this all makes a lot of sense to me because I personally have studied most of the things that you allude to in the book, but not as deeply, of course, in all of the areas that you've gone into. But you've pulled it together theoretically. You've brought about a theoretical synthesis that I think is really quite remarkable and quite profound. I hope a lot of people read your book. I know you do, too.
I do, too, yeah.
You give a case example, and I don't know if you remember it or not. I could tell you the page, but the pages might be different on my copy than yours. But you give this example of working on writer's block with a woman who you called Marcy in a section you referred to as transpersonal hypnosis and healing with the elements. Do you remember that case well enough to take us through it?
I'll try to do an abbreviated version. Sure, I remember it very well. This is a woman whose parents came to one of my workshops, and her daughter was having a writer block and felt like she was not going to be able to be a writer. She had been blocked for 2 or 3 months in her writing. And so she came to see me for just a few sessions before she went back to her home someplace else. And when she came in, she was expecting me to be very complimentary of her writing ability. And instead I said to her, "Of course you're a terrible writer. We all are terrible writers." And she was taken back a little bit.
Yeah, that struck me when I read the account. I thought, what's this? You know, it's like water in the face.
That's right. So I said, well, see, and then I told her the story about how when I was working on my doctoral dissertation, that I realized that I couldn't write. I was blocked for 5 months, and I could see a breath of relief. And she said, wow, this person who's a writer that I've heard is really good book can be blocked for 5 months, and I'm only blocked for 3, maybe it isn't so bad. And then I proceeded to tell her how I couldn't write, and one day I just went out for a breath of fresh air, and when going out for a breath of fresh air, all of a sudden an idea came, and I realized that I couldn't write, but the air was writing through me. And then a couple weeks later, I tried to do that again, and I realized I was such a terrible writer that even a breath of fresh air couldn't help me. So I went into the shower, and while I was in the shower, the nice warm water helped me to relax enough to make it come through again. Another new insight came that helped me to break through a block. And then that didn't work either, but a couple weeks later, and then I went and took a bite of something out of the refrigerator, and getting grounded helped me to get more grounded in my approach in the next chapter I was working on.
So at first you had the idea, I need more air. The element air helped me break through. And then it was the element water helps me break through. And then it was the, what was the last one you just said?
Earth.
And then it was, the element of earth must be the magic solution. Yeah, so keep going.
And this goes back to your question at the beginning about how the elements are useful for healing us.
Yeah.
How it's nothing very esoteric. It's what's right around us in our everyday lives. So when I told her that story, we did a little bit more inner work on her critical inner voices and various things like that in the sessions I have with her. And she went back to her program where she was screenwriting, and she called me about maybe a month later and said that one day she was sitting in front of the fire and an idea came that helped to spark her in her new screenplay she was working on. So the idea that the reason I call it transpersonal hypnosis is recognizing that we're all composed of these elements in the wider whole of which we're a part. And when our ego is so comparing ourselves to other writers or is trying so hard, rather than really letting the creative elements of the universe come through us, that we're limited in drawing on the energies and the powers of our higher self.
Okay, thanks for sharing that story. Now, another thing that kind of leapt out at me as I was going through the book was that you refer to something that you call Qigong psychosis, which you say is actually in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. Now, I don't have a copy of the DSM to check up on that, but that rather shocked me. What's the story on that?
It's in the back of the thing under, I think they're called cross-cultural syndrome. And basically what's been discovered in China is that when people meditate too much on the third eye, that they're not down in their belly and they're not in their body and they can get very inflated. And so that's something to watch out for. When you over-practice anything, many people can use spiritual practices to go be, to increase excess in a place that is damaging and can cause inflation and can cause various other problems.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense to me. I've met people who I thought suffered from that sort of spiritual inflation, so I definitely know what you're talking about there. Well, I wonder if there are any other topics that you would like to touch on before we close things up here. I know you deal with a broad range of both physical and mental problems, and you have lots of case history examples in the book. Why don't we just pick one more before we close off? How about insomnia? I know a lot of people at various times in their life suffer from insomnia. How would you approach that?
Well, I use the River of Life exercise with insomnia and also people with hypertension. Actually, let me tell you a little story about hypertension, because I think that's the leading cause of death in the culture. Those kind of heart problems, high blood pressure, is very problematic. And what I do is I teach people both a combination of Western psychotherapy as well as Qigong movements to help to relax the hypertension. The head of our clinic one time wanted to test what I could do, and he brought in one of his patients into a group where there were 200 people and had me do my River of Life method with this person in front of 200 people. He had insomnia as well as hypertension. And he was 168 systolic blood pressure, and we had one of the top researchers from one of the local hospitals there to measure him with a blood pressure monitor. Then he went down within, say, 6 minutes or something like that, down to being about 126 or 8, something like that. And so people were very amazed by that. But what I point out in my book is that that's not really something to be amazed or impressed about. That's why we really need to look at research very carefully. Because really what is important is the ability to create this with your own will. Because we know that these relaxation processes are very powerful. But can you do that on your own? And that's what these methods do, is they teach you how to empower yourself. So if you need to have a health professional to do it for you, they show you how to activate those methods yourself. And then also to go into what the underlying issues are that are creating your hypertension. And there I tell a story about another patient in the book who had hypertension. And when he did the River of Life and went down into his body and found the issues behind it, he was overworking. He had really severe insomnia as well as hypertension. And his marriage was getting ready to break up because he was so, he was buying new motorcycles all the time. He was very wealthy. And he wouldn't ask his wife about it. He'd only sleep 4 hours a night. And as he was doing the River of Life exercise, he came with an image in his childhood where he got a D on his report card, and his father and his four brothers all laughed at him and said, you know, you're a dummy. You know, you're going to never make it in life. And then one of his brothers said, but don't worry, Uncle Jimmy's garbage truck, you can always drive, and you can come and pick up garbage at our mansion, so you'll always have a job. And he felt so humiliated by that,
yeah,
that stuck with him for years and years, and he took it literally. He didn't rest until he could make more money than all of them put together. That's what he said to himself around the dinner table at that time. I'm going to never rest until I can make more money than all of you together. And that's what he did, and he had forgot that that was his ruling myth. He was also already extremely successful, but he had worked himself so hard that he was ready to endanger his marriage. So what in our outer-oriented culture we are focused on in relationship to insomnia is going and finding the best insomnia medication, looking, as you said before, into the outer world. And those medications produce side effects. And because we don't look into ourselves to see what is creating our insomnia, what's been creating our hypertension, and we look to the drug companies, then we suffer the karma of that by the side effects that come from that, and we can get rebound insomnia. This way, he saw that it was an inner work we needed to do to let go of trying to work through this old issue that he'd been stuck on for many years improving himself. And his wife marked that session as the beginning of his change in terms of being there more for the kids and more for her.
What if listeners want to learn this River of Life exercise? Will they find that in your book or in one of your DVDs? Or
River of Life is a CD that comes with the book. It's a little extra charge, like $15 or something. You can buy it separate from the book or with a book. So if you order it on my website, that is not available through Amazon.com because it's a CD that goes along with it. The other nice thing about my website, when you look there for that or other things, is that every chapter in the book, let's say you don't want to buy the whole book, but you're just interested in hypertension or insomnia or chronic pain, any of those kinds of things, you can just look through the chapters, and for $5.95, you can just have it ordered, and I'll email it to you that night, getting it through PayPal. So you can have it separated that way. And the River of Life process is also available through the as a CD, and it's also written about in the book.
That's a great idea of people being able to order just a chapter that's of interest to them. One of the great advantages of, I guess, self-publishing. This is a self-published book, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Dr. Michael Mayer, I want to thank you so much for being my guest again here on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure to have this amount of depth of time. The disadvantage of other radio shows is that you're doing them very short, and the great service you provide to the community is allowing an author to think a little bit more into depth on things and asking your great questions, and so that your audience can hear things in a little more. So I do hope they check out my website, bodymindhealing.com, or contacting me at drmichael@bodymindhealing.com. So thanks so much, Dr. David. You're always a great interviewer.
Okay, and thank you. I hope you enjoyed the second interview with Dr. Michael Mayer, and that it built on the earlier one. One of the things that he shared with me after the interview was over, and that I've heard from other guests as well, is how much he, as an author, he appreciated having time to talk about his book and to talk about his work reflectively, unlike the standard radio interview that he and other authors experience, where, it's all wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, it's very quick, and it's all sound bites. And I've heard this from a number of people that I've interviewed, so it's very gratifying for me to be able to provide them with that experience and that opportunity. One of the things that hearing Michael talk about all of this triggers for me is recollections of how I used to teach a course called Psychology in the Body not long after I started teaching at Sonoma State University. And I taught it for years and years. And I was, at that time, I was engaged pretty intensively doing Hatha Yoga, and I was teaching classes on that. I was integrating it into some of my courses, particularly the Psychology in the Body course, And this was way before the yogic craze that's now taken this country and the rest of the world by storm. And I was also exploring various body therapies, including Rolfing and bioenergetics and Feldenkrais. And I was inviting guests and practitioners into my classes who were teaching all of this stuff. And a lot of the approaches I don't even remember now. Some of them had passed into obscurity. And I was also teaching Asaji Oli's psychosynthesis. I had taken a training at Esalen Institute. And so I was very interested in guided imagery, and I was teaching that, and I was exploring biofeedback. And, of course, I had a hypnotic hypnotherapy practice. And I was also, of course, increasingly immersed in Jungian theory and dream work. So I had an intuitive sense at that time that all of this could be brought together. And I was trying to do that in my classes. I'm really more of an intuitive person. I'm probably more of a kind of feeling intuitive person than a thinker or a theoretician. You may have picked that up. I'm not sure. At least that's how I see myself. And I really think that Michael, along with a few others, are pulling together those various strands and binding them into a more coherent theory than I was ever able to do. And I'm a little bit jealous, and I'm also congratulatory and glad that it's happening. As I said, I've known Michael since his student days, though he was never one of my students. I knew him through a friend. And at the time, I had no idea he was such a scholar. Perhaps he didn't either at that time. But I have to say I'm in awe of the dedication, perseverance, and scholarship that he's brought to his work over the last 25 years or so. Now, Michael periodically gives a week-long workshop through the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California. This is an incredibly beautiful, powerful, and magical setting on the California coast. It was once the home of a peaceful tribe known as the Esalen Indians. And I think there's something of their spirit that inhabits that land. Most people who go there experience that. And Michael has an upcoming Esalen workshop that you might want to consider, which will take place on August 12th. Through August 17 of 2007. And you can find out, you can get more info about that on his website, and I'll put a link to his website in the show notes.
We're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
Hey, I've got some really great news that I'm really excited to share with you. Believe it or not, we've reworked the website again, and you've just got to check it out at shrinkwrapradio.com. Now, here's what you're going to find. First of all, it will take you directly to the shows page, and the shows are listed with the most recent one at the top of the page, which is how it should be. And in the green column on the left, you'll notice that there is a category list. And for example, you'll see the following categories: business psychology, consciousness, depth psychology, developmental, mind-body, parapsychology, personal growth, psychology and art, psychopathology, psychotherapy, research psychology, social issues, and spirituality. And if you click on any one of those, it will take you to the podcasts that cover those topics. I've gone through each and every one of the currently 96 podcasts and given them tags that relate to those categories. Some podcasts have multiple tags because they relate to multiple categories. So this is going to make it so much easier for you. For example, if you're interested in hypnosis, then you could go to the category on consciousness, and that's probably where you would find the things on hypnosis. Similarly, if you're interested in dreams, you will find those under consciousness. But if you're interested in leadership, well, that's probably going to be under the business psychology. Now, here's another feature, at least on my browser, on the Mac, using Safari, and it might be different on mileage may vary depending upon your browser, but I can mouse over those categories, and if the mouse just, the cursor hovers over it, then it'll pop up some words that help to explain what's in that category. So, for example, when I mouse over business psych, what comes up is business, leadership, organizational development, etc. If I mouse over consciousness, we get altered states, dreams, hypnosis, psychedelics, etc. If you mouse over spirituality, you get transpersonal psychology, meditation, Buddhism, etc. So I've tried to come up with a finite number of categories that somehow would embrace all of my shows. And so far, you know, it's not perfect, but so far it works. Every show has been fallen into one or more of these categories. So I think that's going to help you find the shows that you really want to listen to. Of course, I hope you'll start at the beginning and listen to all of them. And I still hear from people that are doing that. And that, of course, is very gratifying. But I know that not everybody's going to have time to do that, or motivation or interest. And, you know, that's okay. That's understandable. But wait, there's more, because there is, over on the right, you'll see there is a search box. Now, there was a search box on the site before, but it didn't work very well. This is a great search box. If you type in Jung, it'll bring up all the shows in which I've mentioned Jung in the show notes. If you mention the name of any guest that I've had, it will bring up all the shows in which that guest has appeared. Or you can type in a topic, and if it's in that topic is mentioned, or any word is mentioned in the show notes about it, it's going to come up. So we have a really effective, powerful search feature. But wait, there's even more. There is now a place where you can comment on individual shows. And we'll see how that goes. I wasn't sure if I wanted to open up comments. For one thing, I was afraid of spam. But I've been assured that we're probably not going to get too much spam. I hope that's true. If spam turns out to be a big problem, I might have to turn them off. But you're encouraged to, I hope it doesn't mean that you'll stop sending me emails. But sometimes, you know, you're listening to a show on the site and you just want to be able to make a comment right then and there. And you might also be interested to see what kinds of comments other people have left. So right now they all say no comment. But if you click on the no comment, that opens up an area where you can leave a comment, and then it won't say no comment. It will probably say comment. I'm not sure because I haven't seen anybody comment yet. And of course, there is a player, a flash player, so that you can listen to it right on the site, as before. There is also a little button for launching QuickTime or your MP3 player. And of course, on the Mac, if you hold down, I think it's the control key, that would allow you to save it as an MP3 file to your hard disk, or if you right-click with a Windows machine, you'll be able to save the file as an MP3. You can hide the player, there's even a download button, so maybe it's even easier than I just described. Plus, over on the right, there's still that logo that will allow you to subscribe in iTunes, which about 75% of you do, according to our survey. So I think, there's even more. You'll find in the column on the left, you'll see the most recent 3 shows will be right there so that you can click on those. And then beneath that, it says archives. And there you will find by month and year, all of the shows are grouped by month and year sequentially, starting with the most recent. Now, I'm shortening up the feed. The feed has always arrived with all the shows in it. But I've recently learned that when the feed gets to a certain size, iTunes will no longer accept the feed. So I've had to bite the bullet and realize that I can't put everything in the feed. So the way that it's going to work is the most recent 75 shows will be in the feed. And if you want to listen to shows older than that, then you need to go to the site, Shrink Wrap Radio, and go into this archives area on the left and just click on those earliest months, starting with August 2005. And then you can kind of work your way up. And also the search feature, fortunately, the search and the categories, they'll go all the way back to the beginning still. But it's just all those early shows will not automatically show up in the feed. However, that does raise another possibility since, as I was, you know, I had to redo the feed and in some cases had to change the dates. The dates weren't all accurate and I had some duplicate dates which were causing problems. So I kind of had to make up some dates to make sure that everything was flowing sequentially. I'm not sure what the impact of that is going to be for you in iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. And you may find that your computer is tied up for a long time as it catches up and downloads everything all over again. And so I apologize for that right now. This is the only time that that's going to happen, as far as I know. So it's a one-time thing, and maybe it won't happen to anybody. Maybe it'll just happen to a few people. I've got my fingers crossed. And other than that, I think most of the other sites, most of the other features that were on the site, you'll find they're still there. There's still the My Chingo button so that you can leave a recorded message. There's still the GoDaddy logo so that you can go to GoDaddy and get your discounts. There's still the place where you can click on the Frapper map and put yourself on a Frapper map. So you must go to shrinkwrapradio.com and look at the new handiwork here. And give me some feedback and let me know what you think of it. I hope that you'll be as excited by this as I am. Now, of course, this is show 96, so only four more to go to show 100. And I'm still looking for those recorded messages that I can play for the 100th anniversary show. So keep sending those in. You can use the My Chingo link that I just referred to, or you can... You know, you can email an MP3 file or you can leave me a message at ShrinkPod on Skype or leave one on our message line at 206-337-0622. And speaking of Frapper, we've got a new addition to our Frapper map. I was beginning to think it was broken because nobody new had shown up in quite a while here. But I hear from Nikki in Kyoto, Japan, who writes, I'm a psych student from Australia enjoying your podcasts in Japan. How exciting. So now we've got two circles in Japan on the Frapper map. Yay, that's wonderful. Before I close out this section, don't forget that our sponsors for this show are Podshow and GoDaddy, and we're very grateful to both. Remember to use the code SHRINK3 at checkout from GoDaddy to get a discount there, and we've got other discounts on the website.
Hi, Dr. Dave. Just wanted to speak to you in person. It's Tom here calling from London, England. I'm really enjoying the Shrink Wrap work, the website, the podcasts. It's real inspiring, and I just admire you for the work that you're doing, bringing psychology to the lay person and to the professional when they decide to tune in. I really enjoyed this last one with Terence Watts. He's close to me down here in the UK, so it was interesting to hear what he's been doing. I'm doing a similar thing. Maybe we can talk about that one day. I'd love to do that. But anyway, I just wanted to connect with you. I have sent an email in the past, but I just wanted to connect with you again to just let you know that Tom from London is still listening, and I think you're great. Keep it up. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Tom, thanks a lot for that wonderful message, and I suspect that we are listening to somebody who's going to be a guest before too much longer. I think you'd probably make a good guest. And you know what? Tom's voice message there, I think, will have to constitute the reading of the email for today because I spent so much time rattling on about the new website. See what happens when I don't work from a script? And I kind of rattled on for so long about the new website that we've kind of run long and I'm loath to take up any more time. So let me just close by saying, please help us to grow our audience by spreading the word about Shrink Wrap Radio to your friends and colleagues. If you've got a podcast or a blog or MySpace or LinkedIn page, put in a link and put in a plug there. And help us get the word out. It's a great resource for students and professors and other people. I got a great email from a professor at the University of Massachusetts, which I'm looking forward to sharing with you maybe on the next podcast. So thanks again to Dr. Michael Mayer for his insights on body-mind healing psychotherapy. And at this point, you know, I'm not sure who my next guest will be. You'll just have to stay tuned and be surprised. That's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind. Thank you.